Star Wars Action News is brought to you exclusively by Brian's Toys. At briansToys.com, you can find Star Wars toys and collectibles from 1977 to the present. Brian's Toys has it all, from vintage toys and action figures right up to the latest releases. And when checking out, be sure to say you were referred to Brian's Toys by Star Wars Action News. So go check out the world's largest selection of Star Wars toys at briansToys.com.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you frontline reports from the Clone Wars. We are here to bring you recaps and comment on each episode of this new Star Wars adventure. This week, Season 2, Episode 6, Weapons Factory.
Hello everyone and welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network. I'm Jerry and here to bring you frontline reports from the Clone Wars. We've got a great show for you today, but before we get started, I want to direct your attention to our revamped website at republicforces.com. A special thanks to our webmaster Jason, Darth Prime, for the makeover. The site has easy links to all the episodes of Republic Forces and to our Cafe Press Store, our forums, and much, much more. You can also go there to sign up to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. This site has everything you need to satisfy your Republic Forces Radio Network fandom. Be sure to check it out, and thanks again, Jason. As our special feature this week, Arnie has another awesome series of interviews lined up with James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi, among others. Arnie is with us for part one of that interview.
And we're here with James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Good evening, sir.
How are you? Good to be with you.
Thank you. Good to have you on. I want to start, before we start talking just about Star Wars, a little bit about yourself and your other works. How did you get into voice acting?
Okay. Well, you know, since I was a very, very small kid, I wanted to be a voice actor. I knew specifically. I never really had a lot of dreams of being an on-camera actor. I loved doing voices and imitating people and coming up with cartoon sounds and all that. And so I got involved in radio when I was about 16. I started doing stand-up comedy, and then I got into radio. And from radio, it was really a great, starting ground for me, because you learn so much about the equipment and also using microphones and headphones and just getting acquainted with all of that. And so I literally went to the local radio station in my hometown of Santa Barbara, knocked on the door and said, how do you get into radio? And started by handing out bumper stickers and stuff, and worked for free. But every night I would go and lock myself in the production rooms and start recording things and do fake shows and get them to the program director. And so I was always very, very much set on what I wanted to do. And then from there, I got into writing and producing comedy for radio stations, about 3,000 stations across the country, where I was writing and producing and voicing these little comedy bits that would air on morning show radio, kind of like sketch comedy, like Saturday Night Live type stuff. And then from there, I got an agent after putting demos together, and the agents then start sending you out on auditions. And my first real big job was doing a lot of doubling for Michael J. Fox for Stuart Little, and then for the Disney film Atlantis, The Lost Empire. That also was another big one that kind of got me out there and a little more known.
And yeah, you were talking about the voice doubling, and when I was looking over your bio, it talks a lot about that, about how you've been Alec Baldwin and Along Came Polly and Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean. Can you explain to the listeners what voice doubling is and why they don't just have the original actors?
Sure. What happens a lot of times when you're in production with something is the other actor may actually be on set somewhere else, or on location, or they just can't get to them, or it's a real quick, simple fix. Sometimes it's something like cleaning up dialogue for television or airplane viewing. Sometimes it's that. Other times it's literally, it might be one line of dialogue for a trailer that they've got little bits and pieces that they need to kind of cut together, and it just doesn't make sense when they do that. So it makes more sense to bring somebody like myself in that can actually speak in the voice of that person. So I might come in as Alec Baldwin and do his voice for him. In Along Came Polly, he was doing kind of a character. He had this kind of a big, voice like this, and it was during the toast scene there, and he's giving a toast to Ben Stiller and his wife. They just got married at the beginning of the movie, and a couple of the lines, they just didn't have him available, and so I came in and filled in for him. Johnny Depp, I was his double for the Pirates of the Caribbean, doing Jack Sparrow for a lot of the video games, if he was just not available, or sometimes truly on things like that. It's a money money issue, you know, where it's just, it's easier and probably cheaper to hire a voice actor or voice double that comes in and does the voice for them. But a lot of times too, the thing is happens with actors is Johnny Depp, for example, needed to approve everything I did. So it's, they're very much aware that we come in and we'll do this sometimes, but they have to approve of it. David Spade is another person that approves of my work and coming in and filling in for him. So if David Spade's not available, I might come in and just, hey, yeah, great. Yeah. Bye-bye. I'll do that for him. So it's great fun to do it because you get to be all these different people and it's fun to actually watch their mouths moving with your voice coming out of them sometimes too. So it's pretty cool.
That has to be surreal for them too.
Yeah. Hopefully if I do my job right, they don't even know it. That's the trick, you know?
So I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Bowfinger, but the mm-hmm. whole thing yep. about that is trying to get the line gotcha suckers. In real life, I guess they just call you.
Yes, exactly. Exactly right. No, yeah. And in fact, I know that Eddie Murphy has a gentleman that does all of his doubling for all the Disney stuff and everything and Shrek and all of that as well. And so it is pretty funny. There is a small group of us that do specific people and, you know, do their voices when they're not available. And, you know, maybe I guess that is kind of a Hollywood secret there, but you know, it's pretty cool. You can, like, on my website I list all these things. People can go to jamesarnoldtaylor.com and check out the different people that I've doubled for, and there's clips of me doing them and then their voice and then me, and it goes back and forth to show you the how close we can get.
A couple of the credits that you had listed on your website, I have to ask, you keep saying The Tonight Show. And
yeah.
Is that like in an interview, somebody gave a bad answer and you re-answer for them?
No, you know what it is? And I still do stuff for Jay Leno for his new show, The Jay Leno Show. Whenever they do those little bits, like he does like things in his opening monologue where he's kind of talking about whatever's currently happening and he'll have a news clip or something. And I will come in and I'll voice a lot of things for them. So it's usually, like I say, it's kind of more in that comedy bit vein. So, you know, like for example, if there was a time Hillary Clinton said that she was like Rocky Balboa, and so Jay then goes, you know, as a matter of fact, we have a clip of Hillary, and they play the clip, and it's me doing Sylvester Stallone's voice coming out of Hillary Clinton's mouth, you know. So it's stuff like that where we'll have fun, just, you know, whatever the writers there, it's all the writers and their writing that they do for the show is what happens, and I just go in and read it for them. But it's great fun.
And you were also a voice double on one of my favorite TV shows, Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah, I got to do a lot of Ron Howard's stuff. And so if Ron wasn't available, I would come in and read something, you know. So George Michael went to the store, you know, it's little clips, bits and pieces here and there, but, cause for the most part he was available and they would edit together what they could. But, yeah, there was a few times where I was able to go in there and supply his voice for that. And I also got to do his voice for a couple other things. But, you know, funny thing about Arrested Development was at the time I was also, I do a lot of voices for Fox, the Fox network. And, you know, I'll do like,
animation domination continues with The Simpsons, or you know, tonight on Cops. It's a full hour, followed by America's Most Wanted.
And at the time, I was doing all the promos for Arrested Development. So it was kind of fun to go from a scene in the show where my voice might have been there, and then you come back and there's a voice going, you know, Arrested Development continues in a moment. And it's me doing that voice as well. So it was, and I thought, you know, nobody would ever know that that's one guy. So it's pretty cool.
And he's, of course, Ron Howard's notoriously famous for being self-conscious about his hairline. Did he ever ask you to be his hair double as well?
No. Oh, no, never at all. But I guess I would have to be happy to fill in wherever I could. That's great.
And also on your resume, it said that you did some work on The Princess Bride. Was that the movie?
It was actually for the video game, which just came out, I believe, this last year. And they did a game that was really a really cool game, and it just was basically the film. And initially, I was doing both Mandy Patinkin's role as Inigo Montoya, as well as Fessick. Of course, Andre the Giant voiced that. And Mandy Patinkin came in and actually did his part, but I voiced the whole thing, and then he decided he wanted to do the game, which happens sometimes as well. They end up getting free time in their schedule, and they think it'll be fun to do a video game or something. But, of course, Andre the Giant, who has passed away, he was not available, and so I
came in and did his voice for him. You know, my way is not so sportsmanlike, but
nobody would guess that a 5'4" guy that looks like David Spade was doing the voice of Andre the Giant, or Fred Flintstone for that matter too, which is another one I do. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
And with the Inigo Montoya and also Obi-Wan, you have a lot of accents. Was that at all difficult for you to learn all these various accents of the English language?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I guess I just have an ear for them. And I'm sure that a lot of people that are hearing them sometimes are going, well, he missed this part, or he didn't say that right, or whatever. But, as an actor, you try to sell it the best you can. But yeah, I have a tendency to just, I can usually pick things up. It's one of those things, I don't know if you have this ever, but you know, you're hanging out with somebody that has an accent, and you find by the end of the day, you're talking with that accent as well. I tend to do that a lot. So,
To go into Obi-Wan Kenobi's voice is really pretty natural for me now, but
it's just one of those things where I hear it and I can usually kind of mimic it back, and so it's my one, I'm kind of a party trick, I guess, but it's a good party trick.
Has there ever been an impression or a person that you had to work extra hard at before you finally nailed it?
Yeah, actually going back to Ron Howard, believe it or not, because pretty similar to my regular voice, it was actually kind of difficult. A lot of the ones that are similar to my voice are trickier to get than the ones that are really far from my voice. You take, for example, Fred Flintstone. Yeah, but never do. I'm doing that, and it's pretty easy for me to go away from my voice.
Or Christopher Walken. If I'm doing Christopher Walken's voice, it's crazy the way it's so, different from mine. So I might have an easier time actually with that. But Ron Howard, who's very similar, I have to find little things that aren't similar and then go to those to do it. Same with Michael J. Fox, his voice is right about there, and so I had to work on it. Wait a second, Doc. You mean to tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
It's easier to do Doc Brown. The way I see it, Marty, if you're going to build a time machine out of a car, why not do it with some style? It's one of those things where I guess the closer it is to you, the harder it is to get to.
When you're practicing on these voices, how do you hear yourself? Because, being in podcasting and recording myself, I know how I hear my voice in my head is different than how it sounds on a mic.
Yeah, it is from years and years of just hearing yourself constantly. And so I kind of, in my head, I can hear what I know everybody else is hearing, in other words. I know that my voice sounds deeper to me than it does to everybody else. Whenever, you hear yourself, now, of course, you're used to it, but other people, when they hear themselves recorded, they go, wow, that's me. I sound so different. And it's because our head is this great bass cabinet. And so we get a bassier, bigger, fuller version of ourselves than everybody else is. So I've gotten used to hearing how I sound and just, I'm able to kind of pull it down into that zone and just know what I'm doing in that regard. And a lot of times you're working with headphones and you're hearing yourself that way too, which makes it easier. But we do little tricks in the studio. A lot of times we'll cup our hand around our ear so we can hear ourselves better. You see the old time radio guys like Gary Owens used to do that,
Gary Owens. And he would put his hand on his head there, and that was so he could hear himself better. And that's one of the little tricks we'll do a lot of times in the studio to make sure that we're sounding at the right pitch and all.
And you've mentioned that you're the current voice of Fred Flintstone, which is such an iconic and very specific voice.
Yeah.
And Alan Reed's is the one that I probably know best, but was that daunting for you to approach?
it was a great challenge. It was, again, one of those ones where, like you asked earlier, one that I had to work at a bit. Alan Reed, of course, was the original Fred Flintstone, and then he passed away in the 70s, and Henry Corden took over for him. And Henry was actually his singing double as Fred Flintstone, because Alan couldn't carry a tune. Henry would come in and sing. Anytime you heard Fred Flintstone singing on the shows, it was usually Henry Corden. So Henry did it for the next 30 years, and then he actually was the one that helped choose me as the next in line to take over, and he felt that I was capturing what he was doing. So the difference between them,
Alan Reed had more of a Barney, he had a cleaner, deeper kind of sound, and then Henry Corden's got more of a gruff, nasally, more, Jackie Gleason, to the moon, Alice,
kind of sound to him. So what I do is
I take a little of both and I combine them, and there you get, yabba-dabba-doo, that's me, Fred Flintstone.
And combine the two of them as a little homage to them. And I kind of do the same with Obi-Wan Kenobi and combining Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor, too. So it's pretty cool to do that.
Now, with your Fred Flintstone work, you've done some commercials, and I have to say that even though I watch Clone Wars, I fast-forward commercials, and I haven't seen kids' commercials in many, many years. Did Fred ever share the Fruity Pebbles with Barney?
No, he has. He still has not. I mean, you know, Barney is always working it. He's trying to get in there as much as he can, but it's usually, Barney, my pebbles, you know, and then Barney runs off and he chases him. But yeah, it's the same. It's the same old story. You know, he can't get a break.
Thanks, Arnie. And we also want to thank James Arnold Taylor for being part of Republic Forces Radio Network. Tune in next week for more of that interview. But now, as an extra bonus, James Arnold Taylor talked about being the voice double for Michael J. Fox. In the Clone Wars panel at Star Wars Fan Days 3, Dave Filoni had Mr. Taylor do an Anakin Obi-Wan scene in the voices of Doc Brown and Marty McFly. Here's a recording of that.
James Arnold Taylor, my good friend, I have him do this every now and then with his wonderful voice sounds. It's one of my favorite things. James, you can start at the bottom of page one, where Obi-Wan says, you see Anakin. And if you could just read from Obi-Wan to and also play the part of Anakin.
Okay.
So go Obi-Wan, Anakin, Obi-Wan, Anakin, right? Proof, Padme was Qui-Gon, what further proof do you need? You can end there.
Okay.
And just do Obi-Wan as Doc Brown and Anakin as Marty McFly.
Okay, you see Anakin?
Go ahead, laugh it up, okay? But in the end, the risk for both of us, okay, well, you know, it took off, all right? Because Black Todd is a traitor, and everything the Jedi have been reporting about the Trade Federation and the Banking Clan is true, okay? Mallory?
I'm certain that you never let your emotional involvement get the better of you. And you brought back proof of these claims.
Oh, wait a second. Whoa.
Proof?
Padme was poisoned. What sort of proof do you need?
We'd like to thank Glenn, who's a regular on our roundtable discussions here at Republic Forces Radio Network, for providing us with that audio clip. And for all of you Back to the Future fans out there, be sure to check out the podcast, Now Playing, this January as hosts Arnie, Stewart, and Brock review all three of the Back to the Future films. Now, on to this week's episode of The Clone Wars. Before we get started, though, I want to direct your attention to the StarWars.com Clone Wars online comic. Unlike last season, this year's online comic has taken a new direction. Instead of being awkward one-shots that just fill in the gaps between episodes, the online comic is following a separate path, specifically of Master Rapaul's Padawan, Tyzen, and his struggles of life without his master. But I want to point out specifically this week's online comic, because one of our friends here at Republic Forces and Star Wars Action News, Dan Falconer, Reverend Strone from the forums, has joined the artwork team this season, and you can see his debut on pages 28 through 32 of the online comic. That's really cool, Daniel. Thanks for sharing that, and we look forward to following your work. On to this week's episode summary for Weapons Factory. This week's episode features the return of Luminara Unduli and the debut of her very well-prepared and dependable Padawan, Barriss Offee. This episode begins with Ahsoka briefing the clones. Well, at least she's trying to. Anakin has this bad habit of interrupting her every thought. After the briefing, Ahsoka and Anakin start bickering back and forth about this as Luminara and Barriss approach. Luminara and Anakin start discussing the next steps in attacking the droid factory. Anakin is suggesting more of a direct frontal assault, but Luminara has another idea. The factory is built on top of a complex maze of catacombs. The factory is close enough to the edge of a cannon, such that these catacombs can be accessed through the cannon wall with a little slicing and dicing of a lightsaber. The conflict in this episode is not the battle in so much as the struggle that Ahsoka is having with the great faith that Luminara places in Barriss that contrasts what little faith that Anakin appears to have in her. Now, Luminara exhibits great faith in Barriss' preparation and her dependability in this mission. In fact, Barriss has memorized all 200 junctions in the maze and can easily lead Ahsoka and herself through. So on they go while Luminara and Anakin use a frontal assault as a distraction. They do this by marching along the bridge in a parade style. Now I think the 501st needs to look really carefully at this scene and think about mimicking this for Celebration 5. The clones march along but are immediately met by resistance from droids and Geonosian warriors who attack them from the rear. But the distraction works as Barriss and Ahsoka make their way down the canyon. Now Barriss and Ahsoka work their way through the tunnels and hit some obstacles such as a den of sleeping bugs and a brief misdirection, but they soon make their way to the reactor. Meanwhile, Anakin and Luminara are faced to deal with 20 experimental super tanks that TX-21 and Poggle send their way. They bring the rain down on the clones in a hurry. The tanks are ray shielded and the clones can't touch them. And speaking of super tanks, one comes to greet Barriss and Ahsoka right in the reactor room after they plant the bombs on the reactor itself. They fight hard against the tank and the Geonosians, but Ahsoka is eventually knocked out, leaving Barriss to fend for herself. But she is clever and jumps right into a tank and cuts her way into the cockpit area with her lightsaber. Ahsoka soon wakes up and joins her. During all this, Anakin and Luminara put together a plan to draw the droid army in on them that causes them to cross the bridge. Anakin and Luminara demonstrate amazing rock climbing skills by going under the bridge to plant some bombs. They get them right where they want them, and as soon as they're clear, the fireworks go off, dropping the super tanks into the cannon. But this victory is short-lived, as Anakin realizes that the Padawan should have returned. Back in the tank, the Padawans make the tough decision of completing their mission, but with no way out. The super tank they are in can easily take down the reactor and the whole plant, but they're going to be trapped inside too. They make their choice, and Anakin and Luminara watch as the foundry is destroyed. After failing to contact his Padawan, Anakin orders the clones to start clearing the debris. Anakin refuses to accept that Ahsoka is gone, but Luminara is willing to accept Barriss' sacrifice. Ahsoka and Barriss are losing air fast inside the tank, but Ahsoka is able to use a power cell from the tank itself to reestablish communications with Anakin. She sends a signal indicating exactly where they are. Anakin and Luminara combine force powers to remove the final piece of wreckage that is trapping the Padawans. Cue the happy ending. And with that, let's begin this week's roundtable discussion of Weapons Factory.
All right, everybody, welcome to this week's roundtable discussion. Welcome to Republic Forces Radio Network, and we want to welcome everybody in the chat. This week's episode is Weapons Factory. Now, really, is the episode called Weapons Factory? Because that doesn't sound like the title of an episode. It sounds like a place. But this was the sixth episode of Season 2 to air, and from the production order, it was the eighth episode. So we're kind of in sync, more or less, with the production and the airing order. But hey, let's go down the line, introduce yourselves, tell us what you thought about the episode, and also give us a quick comment about what you thought about the time change this week. We moved to the 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time slot, which was last season's normal time. So go on through, tell us what you thought about that, and give us your quick thoughts about the episode. Let's start with Glenn.
I had high hopes. I think I actually really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was very well done. I think when one of the characters is really annoying, you really want to punch him in the face, like someone said in the chat. I think that means that they're doing a good job. I think the animation was, you know, well done again. I think we've really gotten over that hump, and I really enjoyed the episode. I liked what they did. I liked how they really played up the attachment issue finally. They really brought that to the forefront again, and they had a good contrast between Ahsoka and Barriss and how their masters feel about them. I think was a really important, and it was good to see. I thought they did a really great job. And the time change meant that when I was at work at 6:40 and I realized, oh no, I'm going to be late for the show, that I realized, oh wait, I have another hour to get home. So that's really what it meant. It doesn't really matter to me. I generally watch it a little bit late and TiVo, so I can jump the commercials anyway.
Okay, Dave.
Hey, it's Dave here. I have to say I had very low expectations for this episode. I didn't know what to expect. So that being said, I thought this episode was good. There were nothing super great about it, nothing majorly bad about it. It was just good. As I was watching it, I was expecting Ahsoka and Barriss to be bickering the entire time. They didn't bicker at all. I think they had maybe one small thing at the beginning when they were going through the tunnels. And it was just interesting to see how more Anakin and Luminara fighting. But for the time change, it was convenient for me this week. So instead of missing the entire episode, I just missed like the first 5 minutes of it. And then I ended up watching it on iTunes. But something tells me I'm not going to like this going back to 9 o'clock thing.
Hey, everybody, it's Barrett, Master Collect 'Em All from Star Wars Action News. Downloading now, playing with my books and nachos.
Well, you got a double dose on that one. I'm going to give you points on that one. I'm going to start handing out points to people on the round table. You just got a touchdown on that one.
Well, Arnie's not going to be here, so I had to do my part, I felt. As far as the episode goes, I thought it was a pretty solid episode. You know, Dave mentioned that they didn't really bicker, and last roundtable, I thought that they were going to bicker, and I thought it would be more interesting. But I proved myself wrong since I've been doing these podcasts. I proved myself wrong more times than I'd like to admit. But I liked it better. I have to say that they got along. We'll get more into that later. But I thought it was a pretty solid episode. As for the time change, It doesn't really matter to me, the time change. You know, I kind of make my own hours. So I DVR the episode. So I watch them Saturday mornings. So the time change didn't really affect me much. And just good to be back this week. And like I said, solid episode.
Okay. Hey, my quick thoughts on this. I actually enjoyed this episode. I mean, we joked a lot last week about the two girls hanging out and us getting the moral equivalent of a Hannah Montana episode or High School Musical or something in the Star Wars universe with the BFF and, iCarly or whatever going on. But I actually thought this was a pretty good episode. The dynamics of the Padawan were very interesting. Between the two Padawans were very interesting. And I think they didn't really play up on too much of their strife. In fact, I don't think there was much there. And, kind of going back to what Arnie was talking about last week with lots of action without a story, I think this week we had a really good mix. The show still had that video game feel to it, to where they had sort of a, get past this checkpoint, get past that checkpoint, blow up the factory and go home. But, I think it certainly could have been performed or done in much worse. I don't think they focused too much on the interactions between them, and I think it worked, and I enjoyed the action of the episode. I mean, there's certainly some things that didn't quite work for me, but overall, I enjoyed the episode. Now, in terms of the time change, I had to kind of wonder, and really, it didn't mess me up because I had got the information actually earlier that day. But I guess by pushing it back, people don't necessarily miss it. If you actually tuned in live, then you went at 8 o'clock and watched Johnny Test. Now, some of you folks that had your DVRs going, you probably recorded Johnny Test, not knowing what was going on. And I guess that kind of sucked. But they changed the time, and I just want to use this as my first topic. What did everybody think about that in terms of? Do you think it had anything to do with sort of the content of the show in terms of the action, the violence, and things like that? Do you think pushing it back to 9 o'clock had anything to do with that, just because of a push it back later?
Absolutely. I think we talked last week about it being more violent kid show or whatever, with lots of violence and not being wanting to actually have your kids watch it or whatever. Some people sort of implying that. So I really think that was part of it. And there may be rules in regards to what you can show and on a cartoon and things like that in terms of time frame. And it may have been to the point where they sort of had to move it back. But I think, was it at 8 o'clock last year? So, I mean, that may have made better sense too. I don't know what their thinking was or why it happened. But I think that they were maybe too violent to be at 7 o'clock. So they wanted something that the younger kids could still watch at seven, maybe. I don't know.
But if that's the reason, then why do it on this episode as opposed to any Point Rain? Because this episode had maybe a third of the action that the last one did.
Or how about the episode where they tortured the Jedi and killed him? I mean, that was that should have been a 9 o'clock episode, if anything. But to your point, to your topic about the time change, I have to agree with Glenn that they probably figured enough was enough. First run, go ahead and set it back a little bit, and then when they do the repeats, maybe they'll put it back on a different time slot.
Okay, interesting. Well, let's get into this week's episode, Weapons Factory. Let's start from the top here and just talk about the dynamics of the two Padawans. I mean, let's start with the Masters. What do you guys think about Anakin this episode? This did not feel like the same interaction between Anakin and Ahsoka that I'm used to. What do you guys think about that? Let's kind of start there.
He just annoyed the hell out of me today. He just kept interrupting and just not... Like, at the beginning, he had almost no trust in Ahsoka. By the end, he almost had too much trust. And it was almost like he had some kind of hormonal imbalance. I couldn't figure out what was going on with him. It was literally like watching... like some train wreck with him. Like, Ahsoka, I hate to say it, but Ahsoka was less annoying than Anakin in this episode. And that could be a good thing, and it could also be a bad thing. It's a good thing in the sense that Ahsoka is obviously maturing, but do you have to show her maturing by making Anakin act like a 5-year-old? Like, come on.
If I may jump in now, I liked Anakin in this episode. Let me talk about Luminara first. What impressed me about Luminara in this episode is that she seemed to be the senior Jedi master. When she walks up with Barriss at the beginning, when Ahsoka and Anakin are having their discussion, she immediately says, if you guys are finished with your little discussion, but to the point where she wasn't disrespecting Anakin, that I felt like other Jedi Masters have done, specifically Ki-Adi, how he's kind of chiding Anakin, and I have more kills, when she's talking to Anakin, she is definitely the like I said, the senior Jedi Master, but it seemed like she gave Anakin a lot more respect than other Jedi Masters for me. And as far as Anakin goes, you know, I really got the feeling that he really does not want Ahsoka to die. He doesn't want anybody that he cares about to get hurt, to die, with the exception of Obi-Wan, maybe last episode. But, they mention a lot how he turns to the dark side. You know, we know he turns to the dark side because he doesn't want to see his wife die. And I love it when they have these moments where it really reinforces I think it was Reverend Strone on the chat, or someone said that they really reinforcing his feelings of he can't lose anything. And, I like that part of Anakin. You know, he kind of interrupted her a couple times and all, but, you know, that's just Anakin. But I really like the way that they were portrayed this episode.
You know, what we saw in this episode, though, does take me back to one of my fundamental problems with the Clone Wars, and not to get too negative here or anything. But, I mean, one of the things that constantly annoys me, though, is seeing so much responsibility being given to Ahsoka. Anakin was a little annoying, and the whole interrupting thing, I felt like was not a proper portrayal of the interactions we've seen them have for the last, season, some change. But really, why is a Padawan given the briefing? I mean, I think a Padawan should be standing there watching her Jedi Knight, master, her master anyway, he's not a master, but her master doing the work for her to observe and learn and see how it's done. She's still a kid. I mean, the clones, I guess, will respect her because she's done brave things, and they'll listen to what's going on. But I just don't get that. So a part of me is like, yeah, Anakin shouldn't have been interrupting her. Anakin should have just been doing it. But that being said, I thought the whole scene in the playoff between them was just not set up properly compared to how we've seen them interact in the past. Now, that being said, Luminara and Barriss show up, and I kind of felt like Luminara was sort of the I'm here to evaluate you under combat circumstances, Anakin, kind of like she was sort of the and Baron or Dave or whichever one you brought this up. I think they were kind of the higher level master, because she is a master, isn't she? Isn't she on the council? Does anybody know that?
Yeah, I want to say yes, but I'm not entirely sure about that.
Okay, well, let's assume, I mean, at the very least, she's been at this a lot longer than Anakin, so I think that's kind of interesting, especially near the end, where they're talking about loss and accepting the sacrifices. Maybe we'll get into that later. But what do we think? We've seen Luminara before, and Luminara and Ahsoka have, hung out and went into battle together. I think those two fought against Asajj Ventress in an episode last season. But Barriss Offee's new. We've got her showing up. What do you guys think about the dynamics of the Padawans? I made some comments earlier about how I didn't think it was so bad. I think some folks in the chat were kind of, virtually cocking an eyebrow at me like, hey, what are you talking about? What do you guys think? How do these two play off each other?
If I may, I wanted to do a little research on Barriss. So, I get kind of jealous when you guys are doing all the research, and I feel I'm not doing my part. So I went to StarWars.com, and I tried to look up Barriss Offee to see what kind of description they have of her. And it's very interesting because they have two different descriptions. One description they have is from the movies, and she's a loyal Padawan paired with the Jedi Master Luminara, and Barriss Offee stayed close to her mentor's side during important meetings. So she's more of the classic Padawan from the movies. But from the expanded universe, her description is an impulsive streak frowned upon by more conservative Jedi Masters. While she was reserved by nature, not only easily intimidated, there were times when she preferred wielding her lightsaber rather than following the protocols of diplomacy. Now, we clearly did not see that Barriss Offee in this episode. We clearly saw the more restrained, classic Padawan. So this is the one issue. I really like Barriss Offee. I really like Barriss Offee in here. Anybody who can memorize 200 catacombs, in a war briefing is okay with me. She is very, very loyal to her master. She wasn't, very any condescending or I know the catacombs, so follow me and this and that. I like Barriss. I have one issue though. Maybe somebody, you guys can help me out with this. Barriss Offee and Luminara helped Anakin. I believe they met Anakin and Obi-Wan for the first time in the expanded universe when they went to Ancion. Am I correct? Anybody want to jump in there?
Yeah, just before episode two.
Just before episode two, so Anakin was actually a Padawan then.
That was The Approaching Storm? Is that what that book was?
Correct, The Approaching Storm. And I'm halfway through the book where, well, I've read about 10 pages, so I consider that halfway with the man math. But she's still a Padawan. You know, Anakin was a Padawan, and now he's a Jedi Knight, and she's still a Padawan. I had a hard time figuring out how much time has passed between then and now. Why she is still a Padawan. And then they have the scene where Barriss and Ahsoka are in the super tank and they've lost the bombs. And they're like, what do we do now? And Barriss says, I don't know what to do without the bombs. The whole episode, she's leading the charge. She knows which way to go. And when something goes wrong in the plan, she does not know what to do. And that's why she's still a Padawan. And the only thing I kept thinking was that's what comes with being raised a Jedi, being trained to do everything, and you can't think for yourself, as opposed to Ahsoka, who that's all she does is think on her feet. And I thought that was very interesting. And it kind of answered the question for me is why she's still a Padawan and why she's not a Jedi Knight herself. I mean, does anybody else get that?
You know, Barrett, I think that's a great observation. I mean, she prepared for X. She got so far with Plan X, and then when something blipped, she was like, "Oh crap! This wasn't part of the plan." You know, that's right. That's a very good point.
The only thing that really bothered me about Barriss, I mean, I didn't care that whether she's still a Padawan or honestly, I want her to still be a Padawan. I'm sure at some point she'll become a knight sometime soon. But I think that she seemed like perhaps the same age as I would say as a. Ahsoka, where she should be probably older. I mean, I think part of the thing they made sort of in the movie, the big deal that was Ahsoka was kind of young to become a Padawan. And we have Barriss, who's been a Padawan for some time, we think. I don't really know. But, you know, you figure she would be more, you know, closer to maybe seeming like she's like 20 or something like that. And she really seemed to be more like very much maybe a little older than Ahsoka, but not really 5-6 years older than Ahsoka.
I got that she was older than Ahsoka. I don't know. Maybe it was just kind of a height difference or something. It seemed like when she approached her and bowed. Yeah, when she bowed, that kind of put them about the same height. So I kind of gathered there that she's older. But
maybe just because the women are drawing them so small and tiny. It's just like I was afraid if she turned sideways, she was going to disappear.
Well, I was going to say I got that she was older. And she was definitely experienced in a different way than Ahsoka. But speaking on the dynamic of Barriss and Ahsoka, I really liked Ahsoka in this episode. And you guys know I am not an Ahsoka fan. But all the way from where Ahsoka, the animation on Ahsoka was spot on. You know, a lot of times Ahsoka's animation is kind of muted. This time, the white in her Leku, is that still called Leku in her species? But the white on her face, the white on her horns, I mean, it's really, really bright. The expressions on her face, the way her face was animated with her different facial features. I mean, she looked really pretty. I mean, I was very impressed with Ahsoka this episode with the way she looked, with the way that she was calm, with the way that she didn't argue with Barriss. I went out and had to buy an Ahsoka. My first Ahsoka action figure I went and bought after the next morning when I saw this episode. She impressed me that much.
Well, the thing about Barriss and Ahsoka, well, their connection, I notice this a lot because I'm a music education major. So this past year, I've been going into classrooms doing observations of just the teaching methods and the students and how they react. Next year, I'm going to be student teaching. So I just happened to notice on this episode how not only is it just the teaching methods that's affecting the students, but how it's, like I said earlier, affecting the teachers in the sense that, like, Ahsoka, she's totally about improv. She, if something goes wrong within like a minute, she knows exactly what to do. Barriss, like, I forget which one of you said it. Actually, both of you said it. She literally said, I don't know what to do. And I think that really just, I think Barriss's experience is going to help Ahsoka. I think the masters learned more from each other than the Padawans did from each other. Or from the masters. So actually, I was thinking about this earlier where, remember back in season one, Cloak of Darkness, Ahsoka was with Luminara for whatever reason. Maybe Cloak of Darkness takes place after this, and maybe Anakin and Luminara learn from this, and Cloak of Darkness is happening while Anakin probably has Barriss somewhere. They probably switched Padawans for whatever reason. I don't know if they could do that. But I think by having those two conflicting methods, that totally emphasizes on the fact that, well, it totally shapes not only Anakin's character, but, I mean, not only Ahsoka's character, but Anakin's character. Because Luminara and Barriss, yeah, they're characters we know, but they don't really matter, I guess. Like, they're not in the movies at all.
You know, the one thing I think we need to keep in mind, though, too, is that since this war and the timeline conversation we're having is pretty fascinating, because we know the timeline is kind of thrown out the window. I mean, what we think should be the timeline from the micro series or approaching Storm and things like that, I mean, it's kind of being put on hold, I think, as we've heard from, you know, Pablo Hidalgo and Nathan P. Butler and people who have really kind of dug into this a little bit. I mean, we're now just weeks after episode two, I presume, or maybe a few more weeks to where Anakin becomes a knight much sooner in the timeline than we thought and all this stuff. And I think, Dave, to your point, what's kind of interesting about all this is that I think there is so much learning from each other, because nobody really in the Jedi Order really knows how to act in a war. I mean, this is the first time, and I wonder if people like Anakin and Ahsoka are sort of have an advantage, because the Jedi way is not to be soldiers, as you know, as Qui-Gon Jinn told us. So I wonder if their instincts and their reactions and things like that, being maybe that they're less trained Jedi or in the dogma of the Jedi Order, if I can borrow Sidious's terminology, I wonder if this is an advantage to them in a war, because they're not taught to be warriors. They're not taught to be soldiers. So I think everyone's learning a little something from everybody. You know, Padawan to Master, Master to Padawan, Master to Master, Padawan to Padawan. There's so many interactions here.
I totally agree. They're not used to being in the war, but the dynamic between Ahsoka and Barriss was definitely Ahsoka is the future. I mean, she's the future of the Padawans. Barriss is the dying breed of Padawans. You know, the old school bowing when you introduce yourself, you know, all that stuff. You know, Ahsoka, I don't think Ahsoka's ever bowed in her life. And when you're out in the battlefield, you know, you have to, you know, practical application and learning is totally two different things, as you could tell, Dave, because you're, you know, you said you're in college. So when you study something and actually to do it is totally different things. And Ahsoka doesn't have time to bow. You know, she has time to duck. That's what Ahsoka she ducks. She doesn't have time to memorize 200 catacombs. She's got to give briefings. She's got to keep clones alive. She's got to do this. She's got to do that. She's got to do this. Ahsoka really took charge in this episode. And can we talk about I don't want to change topics here. Is it okay to change topics there, Jerry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you. I really want to talk about the use of the Force. I mean, that's probably one of my favorite topics every roundtable.
It's actually become quite a theme on our show too, so go ahead.
I love it. I mean, you know, I've been begging for Anakin to show me what is his connection to the Force. You know, show me something. And Anakin is, as we know, is not a Jedi Master. He's a Jedi Knight. But when he was out on the battlefield with Luminara, he was using the Force powers like a Jedi Master, picking up the droids, cutting a droid in half, slamming this droid into another droid. Luminara was doing the same thing. Luminara is a master. She has mastery over the Force. Anakin is not a master, but he's so powerful with the Force that he can use the Force like a master. It kind of helped me with why, you know, they keep saying Anakin's so powerful. It showed that he was powerful. He didn't have to rip open a tank like I wanted Ki-Adi to do. He didn't have to move a mountain. He just had to have a mastery over the Force, and he really showed it this episode. I couldn't see Ahsoka or Barriss fighting like that, picking up droids. When you see Ahsoka, she's doing more of like hopping around and jumping on droids and doing stuff like that, because that's what she has to rely on. She's not a mastery of the Force, but Anakin's Force use in this episode really impressed me. Did anybody else get that?
Well, actually, while we're talking about the Force, I have to ask this. I know Jedi cannot use the Force on themselves to make them fly or whatever. And they can use it on other people. Can two Jedi use the Force on each other to levitate each other? Because when they were placing the bombs under the bridge, they would have to have such an incredible upper body strength to do that. And what I couldn't even tell what they were grabbing onto. and they seem to do it just effortlessly. I mean,
okay,
if I had even attempted that, I would have dropped, like, instantly.
Okay, I actually do a fair bit of rock climbing, and if there's any rock climbers listening to this podcast, that was an easy 514 route that they're climbing to where there are no – I mean, there's nothing but handholds. I mean, that impressed me just because I enjoy rock climbing, so I was like, man, there's no way. There's no way that somebody's doing that. And you're right. What were they holding on to? Not much. So I actually had that as a note that – well, you probably heard the summary, you know, just amazing rock climbing skills that you're just like, okay, that's an interesting one.
Was it rock? Because I, for some reason, I had in my head that it was metal. Because when they were putting the bombs on the underside of the bridge, you heard a clink, clink, clink. And I also heard that clank when Anakin would go for a handhold. So I kind of assumed that maybe he had magnets in his glove and that the bridge was metal. It wasn't metal. It was rock.
Maybe that was just his metal hand clanking.
But even when the bombs were where they're placing the bombs, every time they set a bomb – you heard a little clink, you know, so I kind of assumed that the bridge was metal. Am I wrong? I don't know.
I mean, that might have just been the clanking of the metal bomb up against it. I mean, you're right. What was it? How was it holding on to? I mean, you know, those are little things like, hey, just to progress a story. They won't get into too much of what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, like, I suppose. But I presume the rock was kind of a natural bridge type thing more so than a fabricated bridge. But I mean, interesting point. Maybe it had some metal support beams that we didn't see, but still kind of an interesting, just back to the use of the Force, sort of an interesting, certainly they gained strength. I mean, I don't think you would have seen any of the clones go out there and do that. Because it's, you know, this is kind of the weird thing that went through my head during that part is, you know, that was kind of dangerous and a big drop, and I know they're Jedi and everything, but man, I would have sent some clones in on that one, unless they were getting some, you know, superhuman strength benefit from the Force, which I suppose is represented out there somehow. But no, that was interesting. I did like, and kind of jumping to the end a little bit, I did like how instead of using the rock movers and everything, that they, Luminara and Anakin combined and removed that final piece of debris, and how they, you know, kind of that Yoda lifting the X-Wing type thing up. So I did enjoy that use of the Force.
I totally agree. It was just like, that was when you said Yoda lifting the X-Wing, that was exactly what I thought of when they lift that huge big rock. You know, so many things about this episode felt like Star Wars. The use of the Force felt like Star Wars. One other thing that really felt like Star Wars to me is the holograms. You know, nothing says Star Wars like a hologram. And they had the Separatists using the red hologram, and we had, you know, our side using the blue hologram. And the animation on the holograms are great. You know, I really like the lines that go through the hologram because it really shows that technology, you know, no matter how much technology you have, it's still a little factor of electricity, you know, a signal, and when they have those holograms and you know, the lines going through it, it really feels like Star Wars. I don't know, maybe I'm a weirdo, but I really enjoyed watching the red and blue holograms. I really enjoyed.
Well, you know, good lead into one of the other topics I had related to technology is the super tanks. What did you guys think about the super tanks? I'm kind of a mixed feeling on kind of how completely dull and unexciting they were, but then they were such a cool weapon that after they started going and attacking the clones, I thought, wow, this actually feels like a real, you know, a pretty important weapon that they're unveiling for the first time. What'd you guys think?
Well, what I thought about the super tanks is when I first saw them, they reminded me of some tank that was in StarCraft, which I haven't played in like years, but I just happened to remember that shape. But like how it was crawling almost like a caterpillar kind of ish. But I don't like how Lucas and all his people, they have a cool product and then they make a newer product and they just make it seem like it's supposed to be cooler just by adding super to it. They got super battle droids, super tanks. There's just, you can't just come up with some cool name. But I don't know, I thought the weapons were kind of cool. I thought the animations on the rockets or the fireballs or whatever, they were kind of, I thought it was badly animated. But there was one shot I thought was so cool. It was when the rocket or fireball or whatever it was, it hit a big cluster of clones
one of the clones flies and crashes into the ground, but it almost looks as if the same thing happens to the cameraman. So the camera angle flies, crashes on the ground, and is almost like on a slanted, fallen, handheld camcorder kind of angle for a good, like, 1.5 seconds or something. But that alone just made it seem so much cooler. I don't know.
See, I really like the way the show introduced them to attack, you know, the clones, and then that way, when the one entered the reactor room, you're like, oh crap, they're you know, just two Jedi now have to face one of these things in closed quarters. Now, someone on the chat raised a really good point. They're like indestructible out in the field, but in the reactor room, Barisophi just jumps on, slices in. And here's the thing that really annoys me about these things. Why are there pilots? Why do they constantly have these machines that are droids with pilots who are droids? Connect them. You know, don't make it so susceptible to go in there, take clone, you know, droids out and pilot the stupid thing. That's the only thing that gets me about these things.
Well, you can't expect to always have a droid around to, you know. I mean, you can't. I guess it's hard to make a machine that's a smart machine. I guess that's. I don't know. It's hard. I. That's a good question. But I mean, I think that you can't expect. I guess if you make a smart machine, then you never need anyone to operate it. But then it's hard to command it and make it do what you want and go where you want it to go. So it's easier to have a machine that needs someone to drive it around so you can have better control of the machine and what it can do, maybe?
Yeah, I guess really that's as good as I can think of one myself, a reason behind that. But that kind of gets me. Because you see the evolution in, I can't even think what they're called now, but the ones in the episode 3 that are attacking them at the beginning, the vulture droids or whatever, those just seem like, hey, that's a pretty good idea. There's kind of a lack of vulnerability there. But now, speaking of the tank, the ending of this, Barriss and Ahsoka take control of the tank, realize, hey, we got a choice to make here. We can blow up the thing and complete the reactor and complete our mission, but hey, we're going to be stuck. What'd you guys think about that? I thought that was a pretty good character moment for both of them.
Well, I love that because I was like, oh my God. It's like, oh my God, they killed Ahsoka. And that was the best kept secret ever in the history of Lucasfilm, you know? But obviously, she didn't die. But I mean, it was like, I actually felt like afraid for like Ahsoka or Barriss because, I mean, supposedly, you know, Barriss is there on Kashyyyk in episode 3, but we never see her, so she could easily die. And I mean, Ahsoka could have died too. And it's much more different than say last episode when Obi-Wan is on his gunship and his gunship gets shot down. It's like, oh, well, he's not going to die. You know, I wasn't afraid at all this Friday. I was like, oh my God, is this it? I mean, is this, you know, they really surprised us? And, you know, it was good to finally see Ahsoka like in peril and Barriss in peril. It was much more moving. I really like that at the end. Now, as for them taking that decision to, oh, let's, you know, self-sacrifice, I don't know that they both needed to be in there, but I think it may have been the safest place. And I don't know. There's a question of maybe how long could they have waited to do it, maybe. But, I mean, I think it was a nice self-sacrificing move by 2 Jedi, you know, sort of what they're taught to do and that they followed their code and they, you know, despite what Anakin would have looked to do in that situation. But I mean, and that they were in a relatively fortified tank, I suppose, that somehow survived the crash. I was contemplating in the chat there that they used sort of a force bubble to help sort of repel and keep the part of the tank that they were in together. But I really like that part a lot. I think that was what you know, part of the best part of the episode when they made that decision and did that and had the explosion and everything. I really like that a lot.
Now, Barriss mentioned that even if the two of us had been killed or whatever she phrased it, she said it would have been worth the, you know, millions of lives or systems saved by, you know, by these droids not being created, by this factory being shut down. That saves countless lives, I think is actually the way she put it. What'd you think? Because what went through my head was, wow, is 2 Jedi actually worth a weapons factory?
For them to even make that decision was, well, I had no reference point with Barriss, but for Ahsoka to make that decision was just beyond me. Can you imagine movie Ahsoka doing that, or early season 1 Ahsoka doing that? That never would have happened. But for her to do that this early in season 2 just shows how quick, not only how much, but how quickly she's maturing. And I'm not going to lie, for when I first saw this, when the tower fell, for about 5 seconds, I was like, is this it? Like, is this really where she kicks the bucket?
But then I remembered, it's the beginning of season two. She's alive. However, little kids probably didn't even, like, think of that. They were just like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. So, just for them to even just make that sacrifice. Actually, like you said, when Barris said, even if we die, millions of people could be saved by this act. But I think the fact that they pretty much this whole episode kind of built up to that moment, which was good and all, but it kind of stunk that it was resolved within like 3 minutes. If they had made an entire episode based around just that fact, where it was complete, like the tower falls and we don't see anything from Barris and Ahsoka. We just see like Anakin and Luminara for the entire episode, just trying to find them. We think Ahsoka's dead. She doesn't show up till the end of the episode or even the next episode. That would be really cool. I think Lucasfilm right now, this is kind of like a taste test. They were on the right track, but they didn't really do much with it. And I think that was kind of a missed opportunity. But at the same time, it kind of tells the audience, hey, this really is a war. She could die any day. And I think it was really a wake-up call to the viewers and just the characters in the show. And when they were trying to find the Padawans, I liked how Anakin was frantically trying to get Ahsoka, but Luminara was trying to stay calm. She was saying, if my student has perished, which I have to say, I like the fact that she said student a couple of times as opposed to Padawan, because that like really emphasizes, hey, it's a student teacher thing. But if she says, if my student has perished, I will mourn her, but I will celebrate her through her death or whatever. But I liked that entire scene, and I just think that they should have done more with that.
See, I'm really surprised. I mean, when I was watching the scene, I just, for some reason, I knew for sure it was going to be continued to part two. I thought for certain, I'm kind of on two minds of this, because I thought they found him too quick, because I was like, oh, well, you know, this third segment's been going on for a while. This must be how they're going to end this episode. And then I thought to myself, when they found them, I was like, nah, because then you would have to base, because I think the next episode is kind of the last one of this arc, or actually, I guess there's two more, really. But then they would have had to have some significant portion of another episode dedicated to this. And Dave, I think I like what you said, though, about them moving on, assuming they're dead, and they come out as kind of like a subplot and work their way out and find them later. I think that would have been far more suspenseful. I mean, there's little enough suspense in these things anyway, especially, I mean, I presume, you know, Barris is going to live. We know she lives because I believe we see her in episode 3. I don't know if she was among the ones we saw on Kashyyyk or not, but I think it would have been a little bit more powerful as a cliffhanger with, you know, Anakin starting to show some dark side tendencies because of how upset he was about it. We see it a little bit anyway because he's so let's kind of move on to this topic a little bit. The comparison between Anakin and Luminara and how they respond to this. We were talking earlier about the old school Jedi and the new school Jedi. How do you guys think about this?
If Glenn, you are the man, and I'll tell you why you're the man. Because I was going back to a couple of the roundtables, and you had mentioned that so far Ahsoka has pretty much been unscathed. And this was the first time, you know, coming back to the last topic for a second. I really wanted to mention, Ahsoka was kind of going unscathed. I really thought she died. I really thought they killed her. And to my surprise, I started thinking, oh no, I didn't want Ahsoka to die. And I'm not a big fan of Ahsoka, but I did not want Ahsoka to die. And this, I really, that was very suspenseful for me. That was all the suspense I needed in this episode. Was, are they going to kill Ahsoka? They have the big dust plume, you know, the big 9/11 dust plume that swooped through the clones, and I really thought she was gone. So, you know, Glenn, you're the man. That's all I'm saying, because you called it. Now, as far as what you were talking about on your topic about how the old school, new school Jedi, that Luminara was really ready to let Barris go, and Anakin was not. Very powerful. Very powerful that Anakin was going to will Ahsoka to be alive. You know, he called in the tank, you know, the drop ships to bring the tank, the debris out, and, you know, my heart was swelling. I mean, I was feeling for Anakin. I was feeling for Ahsoka. My whole emotions were, you know, after that, the droid factory dropped on Ahsoka and Barris, my emotions got so into this episode. Is Ahsoka going to be okay? How does Anakin feel? Is this is what's bringing him a little closer to the dark side if Ahsoka doesn't make it out? And, you know, I was feeling so many emotions during the scene. And when they finally lifted the debris off for the last time and Ahsoka and Barriss, you know, walk out and they take their breath of fresh air. I mean, I was cheering in my heart. I was cheering in my heart for these Padawans. I mean, they made it through. Anybody else feel that way? I guess not.
I guess I just didn't feel the suspense, because I mean, when I saw that they were going to go and clean it up so quickly, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to wrap this thing up. Had they had just sort of stared at the debris and Anakin's little comlink just never got a reaction, I would have been like, oh wow, they're going to carry this on the next week. But still, you just know. But I hear what you're saying, because I mean, they're creating. I'm sure the show's producers or Filoni and Lucas would love for you to start caring about Ahsoka in that sense. That if you get the feeling that she is dying, that you then you'd actually feel something. So I, job well done on that for them on that. At least with you, Barrett. So
I'm very easy to please. So
when he was frantically trying to get all the debris off, I did notice a different kind of connection between Anakin and Ahsoka. When in the movie, they didn't really have much of a connection. It was just like they were put together. In season one, it went from that to almost a brother-sister relationship. Now here, maybe I'm going a little too deep with this, but did anybody feel like it went from a brother and sister thing to almost like a father-daughter thing? It's almost like, actually, this is kind of the point. He cared for her too much, where he almost broke down trying to get to her. So I don't know. Did anybody else think that it's slowly becoming more like a father-daughter thing?
Oh, I totally agree. It's father-daughter all the way. The way they were arguing in the beginning, where you know they're arguing about it's my briefing, and it's totally father-daughter. I mean, that's you're absolutely spot on with that. That I don't have a daughter. I have a son, but I assume that if I had a daughter, she'd argue with me just like Anakin argued with Ahsoka. But I agree with you on that. Father-daughter all the way, and that's the way it should be in war. Jerry brought up the point that masters are learning from Padawans, Padawans are learning from masters, and it's spot on. I agree.
Well, I think this episode did a good job of, creating that sort of dynamic with Anakin and Ahsoka, because at the very beginning, Anakin wasn't very respectful of her talents, interrupting her, and I think he says something like, well, maybe I wouldn't have to step in if you would just do it right. That sort of mentality, kind of like, hey, Dad, why won't you let me have the keys to the car? Well, because I don't think you're a very safe driver. But that if later on she gets in a car accident, he's the first one, rushing to the side. It has that. At the end, he is definitely, there's no question or no doubt that he is, deeply cares and wants to protect her and maintain the relationship he has. Someone mentioned in the chat, and we saw this from episode 3. Well, I guess in episode 2, he cannot take accept loss. He cannot accept the loss of his mother. That changes him. He will not let Padme die. Of course, I think, Padme's a few levels above Ahsoka in terms of the relationship and the feelings there. Even Obi-Wan, at the very beginning of episode 3, and Obi-Wan says, hey, go do the mission without me, I'm done for. And he goes, no, I'm not going to leave you, Master. He doesn't even leave Obi-Wan on the ship when Palpatine's saying, hey, leave him, we're all going to be dead. No, he can't do that. And we certainly see that character trait from Anakin in this show. So I guess you could say this show's, despite how annoying he was at the beginning with the interrupting, he's being, him as a character, he as a character is being captured well in this series, I think, or at least in this episode.
I agree, and I love your analogy.
In the episode guide is when they have that little argument at the beginning, that when Barriss and Luminara are coming in and Anakin and Ahsoka are still bickering, they have the conversation here. Let me get this. Let's see. Did you listen to what I was saying? I was saying the same things you were saying. And then Anakin says, yeah, but when I say it, they actually listen to me.
Oh, the background chat that you couldn't quite hear?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
So, I mean, it's sort of, I mean, I really like that sort of, that's really, I think I'll have to add to that. But I think that, yeah, I really like the father-daughter, it seems very much like it is. And he's like, you know, sort of not even giving her the chance to get it right, as opposed to correcting her if he says something wrong, which is what he sort of should be doing, I guess. But, you know, Anakin, he's not going to do it the right way.
Okay, guys, let's go ahead and wrap up this discussion. I think this has been a fantastic chat on this episode, but let's go down our list with some final thoughts and what you're looking forward to with the preview. Baron, let's start with you.
Final thoughts. First, I'd just like to say thanks, everybody. It's good to see you every week. Final thoughts on this episode. I think I've been pretty clear. You know, I'm pretty jazzed up. I love seeing Barriss. I love seeing Ahsoka. I mean, this episode really turned for me how I think about Ahsoka. I mean, I really have not liked Ahsoka. I always thought that, to some other people's points, that she's too young, you know, to be leading a squadron. She's too young to be given briefings. She's too young. But, you know, someone on the chat, I think Reverend on the chat, said that, you know, the clones are basically toddlers themselves, and that's a good point. I really, really, really liked Ahsoka in this episode. She didn't give up. She let Barriss take the lead. When it was time for her to step in and get the job done, she came up with the plan. You know, Ahsoka was the standout character for me in this episode. I need to watch it again and with my Ahsoka action figure and act out some of the scenes. But strong.
Hey, Barrett, I don't want to interrupt you, Barrett, but if you do that, please videotape it and post it somewhere for us all to see.
Don't worry, I will. It's solid episode. Solid episode. It gave it had a nice little action, good use of the Force. Two different Padawans, two different Jedi Masters. I would like to have seen more of the clones in this episode, but you know, I really did miss the clones, and I'm a clone guy. But when it came to, I really did miss the clones because we had a lot more of the things. One of the things was the catacombs, and which goes into the, I'll just talk about the next episode, what I'm expecting to see, but they're really, really playing up this bug for the Genosians. They're really playing up their bugs, and they live in a hive, and you know, they live in a nest or whatever, and they're just these bugs, and I really like them playing that up. And in some of the cut scenes from the previews from next episode, you see the clones are in the catacombs, and I really want to see more of those catacombs, see the inner workings of the Genosians. And they're going to be, from what I've seen at the preview, they're going to be portrayed as these nasty, scary horror creatures, you know. And I really like the horror fact that the horror aspect that they're putting on these Genosians. And I'm hoping that next episode is going to show a lot more of you know, the Genosians, and hopefully they're eating some of the clones. And I want to see them, you know, making a soup out of some of the. I want to see like the rear horror fact, like what are these guys really about in the catacombs when the clones have to go into the Genosians' territory? I mean, this is where they breed and they sleep and they eat, and that's what I want to see from next episode. And like I said, thanks everybody, and it was good talking to you guys again this week.
Okay, Glenn.
Well, I really like this episode. As I said at the beginning, it had a lot of what I really have wanted to see, and they did it right, sort of unlike, say, the Senate Spy episode, which was kind of seemed like it might have been an episode that would have been really interesting. And I felt that they really, I don't know, they were trying, I guess they played it too close to the Notorious episode movie or whatever of Hitchcock. And I just didn't like how that, I haven't seen that movie, and it just didn't seem like that episode worked right. Whereas this episode, you know, wanted to see another Padawan. I really liked how they played it. They had a lot of, they had the Padawan and then the two Masters reacting, and then the Masters with their Padawan and stuff. There's a lot going on. It was a good battle. They got their end. They destroyed. They made a sort of a sacrifice. There's a lot of good things, I think, in this episode. You know, the exception of how they were sort of hanging underneath that bridge, which I think will remain a mystery. I went back and sort of looked at it. It looked like it's rock, and they're just sort of holding on there with one hand with no problem at all. I don't think they really established that gravity was less or anything like that, but I don't know. Maybe they're just really strong, have force grip or something. But I really like this episode. It had plot, you know, which Arnie would have, you know, was complaining about last week. There was some good action in this. I think it was a really, really good episode. I really liked it a lot, and I want to have didn't get the chance to watch this one in HD, but I will soon. Although, of course, now I got the Blu-ray, so I might want to watch some of those, that special features. But I really like that. For next week, I looking at the preview, I have no idea what's going on next week. I mean, they just their goal is to destroy the droid factory, and they've done that. I'm not sure why they're staying on the planet. I don't know exactly what this weird other non-creature is. It doesn't really look like Poggle the Lesser at all, so I don't know what it is, if it's actually a Geonosian or if it's some other species, it's some other sort of bug that's in charge. I don't really know what's going on next week at all. I'm still looking forward to seeing whatever this episode is. I don't know how it's going to be related so much to the previous ones. I don't know what their mission is going to be anymore. But there are lots of times when we go into the start of an arc where I don't know what it's going to be. But if it's the end of the arc, I would figure I would have an idea. But I don't really know what they're still trying to resolve next week. So I'm not so excited about next week's episode. I mean, I'll still watch, but I really like this week's episode, and I will be surprised if I like next week's episode anywhere near as much.
Okay, Dave?
Well, I like this episode now. When it first aired, I didn't really like it. In fact, I thought this will probably be the first episode of this season that I don't end up buying on iTunes. But then I watched it on TV again, and then I decided, all right, I'll buy it. And then I just started watching it again and again and again. And the more I watched it, the more I came to like it, mainly just because of the whole student-teacher thing, and I'm kind of in that field right now. So it's – I thought this episode actually pretty much is exactly what I needed to buy, because watching this will probably help me with the – my observations and stuff. But overall, it was a good episode. I really like it. And actually, after watching this, I watched Cloak of Darkness on iTunes, and Luminara is pretty much teaching Ahsoka just like she would teach Barriss. And it was just kind of weird watching that episode now and knowing the contrast, as opposed to just throwing Luminara in there and like, oh, they're nothing alike. Now we really know, like, hey, they're on two totally different, like, spectrums here. But as far as next week's episode goes, I am super excited, because before season two came out, people who had seen early episodes of it, for whatever reason, they were talking about all this cool stuff, and there were just some articles where they were talking about zombies. And at that moment, I was just like, wait, what? Zombies? But after seeing this, I'm like, the Geonosians, they looked zombie-like. And I got very excited about that, because I've been waiting for this episode. And I have high hopes for it. I hope I'm not let down. And it'll just be cool to see the queen bug, or whoever that is. And like one of you said, I don't really know why they're going down there. And it showed Obi-Wan in the clip. I'm pretty sure he was like severely injured and like taken away. Why is he all of a sudden back and fully healed? But yeah, I'm looking forward to next week. And yeah, this was a good episode.
Okay, here are my final thoughts on this episode. I put this episode kind of mid-range in terms of how much I liked it. I mean, number one, I was very impressed with the show based on what I was expecting from last week. But, I mean, overall, I have to admit, here's my one problem. I believe we have two more episodes that are on this arc. And I'm actually already tired of being on Geonosis. I mean, we've seen a ton of it from episode two. Glenn, you raise a great point. They accomplished their mission. What else is there to do here? I'm not terribly interested in knowing more about the culture and the lifestyles, you know, the day in the life of a Geonosian bug and who their queen is or king or whatever. It seems like a hive of bees or something, and I'm not into that. So it kind of seems like this episode's going after that, shall we say, Death Troopers type feel of wanting to be sort of the scary, creepy episode, and maybe it was a few weeks late for Halloween, I don't know. But I'm not ready. I'm not thrilled about where this is going. I hope two more episodes. I hope they come up with something that I can really sink my teeth into. This episode is okay, though. I mean, and a lot of folks are talking in the chat right now about, hey, Rise of the Bounty Hunters, where are we? What's going on here? We've seen Cad Bane. We had a really good start with him, and now we've totally shifted to this other theme of tearing down droid factories on Geonosis. And I don't know how I feel about that yet. I'm optimistic, but let's see where it goes. I hope they wrap this thing up pretty I mean, I know there's two more episodes, but I hope they wrap it up pretty clean and so we can move on. I hope it ties into what we're hoping to see with Mandalorians and Bossk and all these other. I hope it ties into somehow. So let's see. But in terms of this episode, I think it was okay. I mean, we haven't said this in a long time on the show. Definitely not one of the best, and definitely not one of the worst. It's but I think it's a little bit better than mid-range. Certainly exceeded my expectations. So again, Glenn, Dave, Barrett, thank you for joining us. I want to thank everybody on the live chat. And we will talk to you next week, same time, 9 p.m. on the chat here at republicforces.com. And be sure to check out the new republicforces.com site that our webmaster Jason put a lot of time into to revamp and make it so much more user-friendly for everybody. It looks great, so check it out.
We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in this week. Again, don't forget to check out our newly revamped website at republicforces.com. Before we sign off, though, we wanted to make you aware that our sister podcast, Now Playing, has been nominated for a podcast award, and you can help. Go to podcastawards.com and vote for Now Playing in the Movies Films category. You can vote once a day per email, so go check it out. Also, you can check out the Now Playing podcast at nowplayingpodcast.com. Well, thanks again, and we'll see you next week in the chat at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So long.
This has been the Republic Forces Radio Network, your source for Clone Wars coverage. Please visit our website at republicforces.com to join in our forums and find out more about the show. For more Star Wars podcasts, listen to Star Wars Action News, your source for Star Wars collecting, news, reviews, and updates. Star Wars Action News can be found at swactionnews.com. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2008. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains is trademarked and copyright Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. Republic Forces Radio Network, your Clone Wars news leader.